get everyone involved in this because we are all touched by it. And it allows us to know, again, how much more similar we are than different. I think that's a very important awareness at this moment in our evolution of humanity as well, bringing that concept back.
I'm Suzanne O'Brien, former hospice and oncology nurse, and now the founder of the International Doula Givers Institute. My life's purpose is to teach others how to care for those at the end of life. So if you are a family member wanting to learn how to care for someone you love at the end of life, or you are someone who wants to be a professional end-of-life practitioner, this is the place for you. So sit back, get a cup of tea, and relax. This is the Ask a Death Doula podcast.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to this episode of Ask a Death Doula. We have today Kim Adams. I'm going to read her bio. I just was asking her and talking about a million things because this is a beautiful, wonderful human being, and we have worked together in the past, and it's been a while catching up. And again, she has been instrumental in helping the death and dying movement for it to be positive for all people in so many ways. And I kind of feel like she's just getting started. So let me share her bio, and then we're going to dive into some great questions. This is Kim Adams. Kim's formal work with death and dying began in the early 1990s when she worked as a case manager with people dying with HIV and AIDS at a community health center in Albany, New York. Since 2010, Kim has been a certified professional end-of-life coach, guide as a hospice volunteer, home funeral guide, and a community educator and speaker on death and dying, home funerals, and green burials. In addition to end-of-life education, Kim has experience with nonprofit leadership, having served on local and national boards, including both 501c3 and 501c6 organizations. She has served on the board of directors as secretary for the National Home Funeral Alliance, as well as the National End-of-Life Doula Alliance, NIDA. Kim is currently the secretary of the Omega Home Network Board of Directors, a nonprofit national membership organization that promotes the development and expansion of community homes for the dying people. She is also the past board president of the Lilly House, one of the social models of Omega Homes in Massachusetts. Kim is passionate, like many others in this field, to change the way we approach end of life and after death care. Her vision is to have community homes for the dying in every community in the United States and abroad. Let's do it. Kim Adams, welcome.
Thank you, Suzanne. Wow.
Yeah. That is your bio. And
thank you.
You know, when I read that, we've known each other for years through this work. You are amazing force. And this is where we're at. And I want to share, and this is so important because obviously people do know that I am the founder of Doula Givers Institute. We have thousands of certified end-of-life doulas. And we've been talking about what are the ways that we can help this end-of-life space with new, innovative, supportive ways. And one of them is the house, the doula house, because for multiple reasons, and then I'm going to ask you to explain what Omega Network is that we have an aging population. We have end of life that has, in the last 100 years, turned into a medical experience. We've handed it over to medical, and it's not, and bringing that awareness back. However, we have such a rising demographic with our aging and end of life that we don't have this set up. And there are, you know, just a statistic from baby boomers, there's almost 20% of the people aged 65 and over in the United States alone. So we're not going to go global yet. We'll stick to this country for a moment. They don't have their own children. And it's usually adult children that will take care of end of life parents, not always. And there's no judgment there. But there's a huge number that just don't even have that option. And then there's people who just aren't capable of caring for people. So having these homes, holistic homes, is to me one of the major answers. And it's also what a beautiful space that is. So Kim, I want to welcome you to the show. And can you share with us about Omega Home Network?
Sure. Thank you. It's such an honor. And, you know, and I know the reach that you have in this movement for Omega Homes, which really are social model homes. As you said, you know, so much is medical model. This is a non-medical model. This is found, so the network itself was founded in 2017.
Okay.
And we've grown, we have over 100 homes, or excuse me, 100 members of the network across the US. There's about 57 open homes, and
okay.
there's about 47 visioning, you know, that people yeah. that have the idea to start a home.
Yeah.
And so one of the pieces is it's a non-medical option, an mm-hmm. extension of the family in response to exactly what you said. A lot of people maybe cannot care for their loved one at home, maybe don't have the resources. Yeah. Maybe the individual doesn't have a home and they don't want to be in a nursing home. They don't want to be in a hospital.
Yes.
And so these independent homes in the community, so these are community homes, just like in your neighborhood, mm-hmm. are an organization needs to be founded a 501c3. So someone needs to kind of be in charge of it. But
sure.
it is staffed by two things, or it is done by two things. Number one, 24/7 caregiving, whether it's lay caregivers or paid staff, volunteers.
Yep.
And number two, there's someone there around the clock. You know, hospice cannot be, as we know, and that's one of the myths, right? That people think, oh, I have hospice, so they'll be there all the time. No, with these homes, you have the opportunity to have someone present with you at all times. So you really are an extension of the family. So the family is absolutely, if there are people involved, absolutely included in all this. And we are non-medical caregivers as an extension of the family, giving love and support to someone in their life.
Yeah. Yes. So we, like everything here is so important to hear, because again, I feel like for doula givers and my platform is really, again, reminding doctors, people in the world, families, that death is not a medical experience. It's a human one, and it can go really well. And it's a holistic one, and it's a guaranteed one. And it's so interesting, Kim, because sometimes I'll say that phrase to doctors and they're like, oh, they're like, right, it's not a medical experience, yet we expect doctors to fix it. It's like, we've set a bar that's impossible to maintain, and it's causing so much more suffering for everyone involved, and these holistic homes. And so let's go back to that. Now, we have been talking about doula houses, having the doula training and having these loving homes that are in communities that people can not only have end of life is in, which I love for what we're going to hone into today, but maybe even rolling it back to aging when people don't have, because we're living so very long eventually. And we were thinking, how do we do this? And how can we get this done? And your organization has the framework, has it all worked out? And so again, my doulas are absolutely on fire for this because they're all wanting to do it, but we didn't really know how. And so I love that you emphasize that it's a community home, that it's non-medical, because again, end of life is not a medical experience. It's a human one. But within that, I want to ask you, when you have your end of life people in this beautiful home, do you have hospice then come in just like they would in a family setting?
That's exactly right. And that's a hugely important piece.
Yeah.
Is that the home and the folks within it provide the non-medical, but a family needs to be enrolled in hospice, and any medical questions are directed to the hospice.
Love it. Just like it, I mean, it makes perfect sense.
Just
so
like
what you've done is you filled the hospice gap, which means that people, if we don't talk about end of life, which we're not right now, it's the number one fear in the world. People don't know what hospice does or what they don't do. And the time that they usually find it out is when their loved one gets a terminal diagnosis, gets put on hospice, which usually is very late in the process. And then they realize, wait a minute, hospice isn't here every day. The hospice nurse comes in and out that I'm supposed to do the care. It doesn't work. It's not a well working model right now. And what you've done is created that 24 care in a loving environment to supplement that. So absolutely love it. Now, when I was in New York State, my problem with the homes that were there, if there were any, that I believe they were only allowed to have two beds. So we really want to talk about what that looks like, because for me, that wasn't really going to make a big difference with the need. And so how do we get around that? And if you can share a little bit about the structure and how it works state to state.
Sure. And actually, that's one of the biggest hurdles is kind of state licensing or regulations, because it's so new. organization or states don't know how to classify these homes. They want to say they're in assisted living or a group home or, you know, elder care, and it's none of the above. And so one of the things that we do at the network, if someone becomes a member, even at the visioning level, they have so many opportunities for resources and things. And the first thing we say is start local.
Yeah.
Just get your community on board locally, because you don't want to go all the way to the state, because then they're going to say, oh, you're in assisted living and you need A, B, C, D through X regulations, which don't apply.
Okay.
And so there are some things, for example, New York State and Massachusetts, if you have two beds and under, you don't have to deal with any of the regulations, no licensing, no nothing. However, to your point, two beds isn't going to serve a community.
Yeah.
And so that's why my vision is to have homes in all communities. There are lots of them in Western New York. And so we're starting to see little clusters form because of exactly what you're saying.
Yeah.
There are some, some states where it comes down to finances. If you charge or if you don't charge, for example, there's a home in one of the founding homes, Clare House, that's been around for 20 years. And I want to say some of these homes have been around for a while, and four or five of them got together and said, hey, you know what? Let's stop doing this independently. Mm-hmm. Let's form a collective and a collaborative and share this. So there's cooperation as opposed to competition. But Clare House, they are not under any legal or licensing regulations because they don't charge. If they were to charge, that bumps them up to all kinds of stuff.
Okay.
So it really depends how you're classified, if you charge, how many beds. And we're still learning that as new.
Yeah.
We have a couple of members in New Jersey, and they're running into all kinds of challenges, and we're trying to give them language to go to their folks to say, this is not an assisted living. This is not, you know, a nursing home. This is non-medical in the community. And
so I want to stay on this, for I think this is a very important thing to highlight. Really very similar to the death doula movement is when I kept being stopped, when it was like, this isn't reimbursable, it's not a government licensure, won't fit it, we won't get paid for it through the structure. When finally I said, so don't get reimbursed for it, take it out of the structure, we were free to do and to be with patients as long as we wanted and to do everything non-medical capacity. You could charge, you could not charge, you could do sliding scales. And of course we do it all. So I'm thinking that, and I love not having red tape. Yep. So if I understand you correctly, sometimes when you have a house that isn't charging the patients, it frees them up to be able to not get structured into all the nonsense. And I guess there are beautiful ways that we can creatively think to fund that housing. Mm-hmm. Is that correct? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yes. Because another important piece is there's no government funding, no Medicare, Medicaid funding for the homes. It is really community support.
Yeah.
So really assessing what is the capacity of your community to support this. In addition, you know, some families, legacy, you know, they've had a wonderful experience with their loved ones and they want to give back. Yes. Of course, that is doesn't helpful in the startup funds,
right.
But looking for philanthropy in your community, getting people on board, talking about the need for this.
Absolutely.
It really is the key. Having little fundraisers.
Yes. And I think that we have to understand that we're all touched by this. Not one person. If you know any different, let me know eventually, but there's not one in my life that we haven't been touched by end of life, with our families, with friends, with ourselves eventually. And so we're all invested in this, right? And that good end of life has a ripple effect and it lasts forever. So I feel like, again, you're exactly right. Is it start it local at your community and get everyone involved in this, because we are all touched by it. And it allows us to know, again, how much more similar we are than different. And I think that's a very important awareness at this moment in our evolution of humanity as well, bringing that concept back. So if I understand correctly, so it is, okay, so if we join the network to do a home, everything is nonprofit, is that correct?
That is correct, yep, okay. Nonprofit, yep.
So I can't start one for profit because that just doesn't go along with the philosophy and the ethics, right?
Correct, yeah.
Okay, good, and I just want to get that clear, and we don't need to, because this is what we do. So I come to your organization, I want to start one, and I'm just going to use myself as an example. I Can you walk me through the initial steps and also maybe what some startup costs would be for me and what I'm looking at? So I sort of have an idea of the vision that I'm going to create.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So certainly the first thing I would say is, you know, check out the omegahomenetwork.org website. We have lots of resources there, and become a member. It's $100 for a year, but I feel like the resources that you get, number one is a startup manual.
Yeah.
Like from, okay, I have the vision, as you said, like, how do I even create a 501c3? You know, what's important in that? Yeah. And then a board of directors, and then, you know, some financing in terms of fundraising and all that. So it really does walk you through beautifully. What I love about the network is that there's also community calls. Once a month, it's open for everyone. It's not structured. You bring your questions. We have that for everyone. We've also started, because we see there's a lot of people interested in the startup, a special interest group we call a SIG, especially for visioning and people. Now, I run that with the administrator for the network.
Okay.
People exactly in your say, you know what, here's what I'm looking at. Here's my questions. You hear from others what their questions might be, so that you think of things you don't even think about. You don't know what you don't know. And so being able to have those connections, we also have a forum on the website. Type in questions. It's amazing the support that you get. I'm looking for a template to, how do I even form a 501c3? I need a template for this. How do I structure a first board? We have all those already, because the number one thing is we don't want to duplicate services in the community in terms of doing what hospice does or what other caregivers and community organizations would do. And we don't need to recreate and duplicate what someone's already been doing. And so the beauty is just the number of resources to support. What we're moving toward is getting some language, again, as I said, to help with these licensure things, because we are encountering states that are like, nope, can't do it. And we're like, yeah, we can do it.
Yeah.
And here's how we can support the individual to go to whoever they need to with language that says exactly what we were talking about earlier, that everyone's affected by this.
Yeah. And I think that's just the question. And I think, you know, it's just a question of us getting, pausing for a moment and creating that conversation that, look, this is a real situation. There are people that don't have care. There are people that can't do care, and it affects every corner of the world. How can we, and again, look, individual states, how can we support our people of this beautiful state? You know, I think that, again, just getting back to the humanity of this journey is really important, and having language to help support that is critically important. I have a feeling, Kim, you're going to have a lot of people joining your network after this, but that's because I'm like, I'm into. So, okay. So let's just say I buy a home. I'm able to buy a house. And then I'm joining your network. And so patients are never, or residents, however you want to call them, are never charged anything in this, right? In the home?
It actually depends. You know, some states they don't charge because of regulations. Some they do. Some there's a sliding scale. Some is a donation based. Some is after the death, the family wants to give in appreciation.
Sure. Yeah. But not insurance is taken or not.
Correct.
Okay, great. And this is really important to get clear. And I actually am somebody who likes that because I like the lines to be very clear, and I don't like a lot of red tape, which sometimes that takes.
Yeah.
Okay. And then can you tell me a little bit about how many beds and how many states? Like, what is a state that has, or again, I guess it's different for the classifications of what it is, but where have you seen a home, if you have, that is able to have 10 beds? Or something of that nature.
Yeah. It's anywhere between 2 and 10 or 12 beds is the average at the moment. There's some ways around that with some states. I'll share that in a moment. For example, Clare House in Oklahoma, I think they have 10 or 12 beds at the moment. And so, you know, they're expanding. I think we just got a couple of new applications for other homes, for other visions in the state of Oklahoma. So they're kind of expanding that way. In states that may have some type of requirement, you know, you can only have 6 beds or whatever. I'm thinking of Missouri. There's a home there, and in Tennessee. So they have their home. It's up and running. And now they're building a second one. And so they're 2 separate homes.
Oh, I love it.
One literally across the back alley. they're building.
I love it. Oh, I'm so, like, okay, I'm going to buy a big piece creative. Of land, and we'll have, okay. So yeah. And again, I think we have to remember that there's always a way. There's always a way that we can't just stop, you know, we can't just stop getting answers to major issues that are in front of us to provide care. So this is such a beautiful thing. And I love that. So you can have multiple homes.
You can have multiple homes.
Okay, great. So
and just on one your point on that, Suzanne, that each home is really different with their own flavor, with their community, with their values, whether it's urban or more rural, whether you're renting a home or you purchased a home or you bought a home or you remodeled a home. I mean, the gamut is open. People come and say, I want to do this. I don't have land. I don't have a home. Okay, let's just kind of help you to explore.
I love it.
And because you go back to the community. Yeah. You go back to the community wants to help.
They do.
They want to be involved. That gives them a purpose, you know, whether it's helping with the garden, helping to build, helping to cook food, be at the bedside. Yes. I mean, there's multiple roles.
Of course.
In a volunteer capacity.
Or yes.
Even paid capacity overnight if someone chooses that. There's a home in New York. They are entirely volunteer. Mm-hmm. No executive director, the board president, if he needs to step in as an admin, he does that. Otherwise, it's entirely volunteer. And people
are so good, Kim, and they want to help. I feel like they just don't know how to, right?
Yes.
So if we can give them that opportunity, and for our doula houses, like I see these incredible, holistic, loving places where wherever, whatever your acuity is and whatever your gift is that you want to share, just like you said, gardening, or do you play an instrument, or do you teach a yoga class, or whatever it is, and just having this love fest in there for patients, for families, and again, rolling it back someday, hopefully into an aging, and then they're just there for the end of life, because we do have that issue as well. But we'll start here at this moment. Okay, we have so many doulas that are in other countries that are saying, I'm in Brazil, I want to do it, I'm in other places. Is that something that your network can support as well?
You know, that's a great question. Right now we are just nationally here in the US, but I would love to explore that option.
Right. I'll tell you this. Usually, and unfortunately, this is a sad thing to be saying, in other countries, it's easier to get these things done because there's not as much red tape. So if you have the funds and you put up a house and you have this beautiful care, let's do it. And again, a lot of underserved populations that don't have a lot of resources, this is something that we critically want to support them having their own resources. So I think we'll be able to use a lot of your model and do that. And I'm so excited to see the posting of people in other countries that are like, I want to do it. I want to do it. And we actually want to actually help them do it financially and also with the information. So I'll keep you posted on that.
Oh,
and we'll
please,
talk.
Yes.
Okay. You have an event coming up. Can you please tell us what this event is and then how people can join it?
Sure. Yeah. Another benefit of being a member is we have an annual conference. Now, non-members could come, but members get a reduced price. Mm-hmm. The annual conference this year is in July 17th through 15 through 17. I don't know why I want to say further. July 15th through 17, Monday through Wednesday. That Monday is a boot camp. So we have a startup visioning boot camp, and we have for homes that already exist, like a little bit more intensive, a little bit more focused, because the general conference is clearly nuts and bolts and logistics, but it also takes into account this year, our theme is embrace every angle, a 360 degree approach to empowering your organization. So we're looking at self-care in addition to logistics and nuts and bolts. So there'll be writing workshops and things obviously all around the home, but things that really kind of nurture the folks that work there and the volunteers and the staff. So that will be in Indianapolis, Indiana. And we do the conferences. Usually we hope at least two homes. This year it's just one, because we do house tours. So we have the buses take people. So you can see a house in Indianapolis. Last year we were in Michigan. We saw two houses there. We've been to Oklahoma. We saw two. So you get a sense, especially if you're in the visioning stage, of what's possible and what could be. So that will be this year in Indianapolis and omegahomenetwork.org. Click on conference and all the information's there. And a big shout out. Thank you so much, Doula Givers. is one of our sponsors. So thank you, Suzanne. We're so happy.
It's an honor. Kim, I've been, you know, with you traveling this journey for so long. And again, you just are heart-centered and amazing, the work that you're doing. And I've always been talking about doula houses, and Omega House is the perfect complement. And I think right now is the perfect time for this whole next phase of death doulas who want to start these houses to now get that framework, get that information, and create that vision, and then create that reality. So what would you say to somebody who is thinking about starting one of these homes? What advice would you give them?
Wonderful question. Well, I would say join the network, and you, yep. I'm always available for sharing. Like I said, I run that special interest group. Just collect information and reach out, because again, you don't need to do it alone. You don't need to recreate. You might need to tweak if it's not applicable.
Sure.
There's so much that's already been created that we don't need to. So, you know,
and to do it,
and just do it. Yeah.
And just do it.
Explore it. Begin having conversations in your community. If it doesn't lead to a house, it's going to lead to end of life conversations. That's going to be
amazing.
Beneficial.
I think what's going to happen here is I think you have so many doula givers who are going to want to do this, that I think we're going to probably have like joining and then a subgroup too within conversation, because it's again, supporting each other in answering the questions, getting over the humps, and actually just doing it. And now is the time for action. You know, we are humans that have to get this right. And again, you know, we know how end of life is going, and it's not going well for most people. And there's got to be new systems in place. And these beautiful homes are part of that vision. So Kim Adams, thank you for all of the passion that you've brought to the end of life space and continue to do. And thank you so much for giving us your time today. This is the beginning of the next phase with Omega Home. Yes. So thank you so very much.
I just want to share one more piece. If people get together, because it is hard to say, oh, I'm just going to do this on my own, pull a group together and say, we want to do this in your geographic area. You know, because then you can divide up the tasks, because it is labor intensive.
Yes.
So we just need to be aware of that to get things going. Someone's speaking to the local rep. Someone looking at fundraisers. So get a group together. That's what we encourage as well. Network.
Right. It's fun that way. And the momentum is amazing. Yes. And I love that you said in your local area, have an informational session. Have a monthly thing at the library talking about this vision of this house for our community and get everyone involved and invested in that. So incredibly beautiful, Kim.
Perfect.
Thank you so very much. Again, this was Kim Adams. She is an amazing end of life provider and also just starting the Omega Network. I think this is going to be the beginning of some beautiful houses that are being built. And I want to thank you for being a guest on Ask a Death Doula. Thank you so much, Kim.
Thank you, Suzanne. Appreciate it.
All right. We'll see you in the conference.
Okay.
Everyone, your information is down below. Check them out. Join the network. We will also have follow-up questions that we'll be answering from you. And I want to thank you all for being a guest again, being part of Ask a Death Doula today. We'll see you later. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for being part of Ask a Death Doula podcast. Please remember that everyone everywhere has the ability to have the good death with the right education, kindness, and support. See you in the next episode.